Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Taylor Velazquez. New Mexico has struggled historically when it comes to education, and while educational outcomes are low overall, they're even lower for special education. It's estimated that 16.5% or just over 50,000 students in New Mexico needed special education services in the most recent school year, a rate higher than the latest national data shows. Test scores are also significantly lower for special education students, with only 15% being proficient in literacy, 9% proficient in language arts and science, and only 6% in math. Nearly a third of special education students did not graduate from high school back in 2021. The landmark decision in Yazzie Martinez versus the State of New Mexico set out to address chronic achievement gaps in special education. However, even with legislative investments, few interventions have been specifically made to address special education. However, in May, Michelle Lujan Grisham announced the executive order that would establish the Office of Special Education to operate under the Public Education Department. The goals of that office are requiring professional development for special education teachers, promoting recruitment and retention of those educators, and enhancing assistance for behavioral management. This morning, we'll hear from experts, parents, lawyers, and teachers and discuss what it would take to close achievement gaps and ensure special education students are receiving an equitable education. And we want to hear from you. Are you a parent of a special education student? What services do you think are missing? Are you a special education teacher? What do you need for help your students? Email letstalk@kunm.org or call in live at 505-277-5866. And my first guest this morning is Arsenio Romero, secretary at the Public Education Department. Secretary Romero couldn't join us live this morning, but we did chat yesterday morning about the current state of special education and the plans for the future. I want to start off with talking about the executive order Governor Grisham announced just a few months ago. The order will create the Office of Special Education, which is the first of its kind in New Mexico. This office will operate within PED, but what are the goals of this office?
Absolutely. No, thank you. I'm really excited about this. This was brought through the last legislative session, and we weren't successful with getting it all the way through. But we had so much wonderful support from families and advocates and teachers around the state, legislators, and of course, our governor. And so I want to thank our governor for having the vision to know that this is important. This is important work that we want to make sure that we are providing students with IEPs across the state of New Mexico, no matter where you live, the best services possible, the best resources possible, the best teachers that are highly qualified, and of course, those resources and dollars that go along with that. And the intent behind this is to elevate the importance of special education in our state, no matter where you're at. So whether you're in the metro area of Albuquerque or Rio Rancho and Santa Fe, or whether you're in Animas or Wagon Mountain, New Mexico, you're going to be able to have the same resources at your school, no matter where you're at. And so when we talk about what are the goals, it's really to do a few things. First thing maybe I can talk about is providing that professional development and support across the state of New Mexico. We know what works. There are many examples of programs across New Mexico that are doing amazing jobs. And we also have some examples of schools where we know that they need support. And the reason they need support is because maybe a lack of resources, maybe a lack of staff. And so we want to make sure that no matter where you're at across New Mexico, that you, your school, your teachers will have access to that wonderful, comprehensive training and professional development. With this, we'll also hopefully come additional funding. I want to thank our legislature for doing that this year. That's going to allow us to start this work now, to be able to have that high quality professional development across the state. The second thing I really want the intent around this is to really renew a sense of commitment around retaining and recruiting teachers into this profession. And this is an issue across the nation, but we have some wonderful plans moving forward to first work with our universities to be able to revamp our special education and our teacher prep programs. We also have some amazing plans to go out and recruit teachers from across the nation. And so I'm looking forward to you seeing those as we start to roll that out. That's going to be coming very, very quickly. And some of the things that we're going to be able to really tout is that coming to New Mexico, this is a place where you can be a teacher. This is a place where you can work with students and be able to make a difference in the lives of students. But it's also a place where you're going to be able to make more than all the states around us, especially if you're a brand new teacher. We're also going to continue work on making sure that we have better packages when it comes to benefits. And so this work won't end, but it's going to continue. We also want to make sure that students have the opportunity to have a plan put in place from cradle to career. And this is where this is going to be huge for the efforts within special education, is have those partnerships between ECECD, it's early childhood, of course, public education, and higher education. And so I know this as a parent. I have a daughter with autism, and I wish I could go back in time and be able to put plans in place, and actually just a resource for myself as a parent to be able to say, this is the trajectory that we think our daughter can do. These are the things that we want her to accomplish. These are the goals we want to happen.
It sounds like there's a lot coming down the pipeline here soon, but I want to get back to the executive order and the additional announcement that there's a national search happening for a new director. Are there any updates on that search, and should we expect a director to be appointed soon?
We are deep into looking for the leader to take this on, and I'm looking forward to finding that person. We have had a number of candidates, and my job is to find the best people possible for every position, and this is extremely important that we find that. We haven't found that person yet. We are well into interviews, and we're going to continue to do that, but that work is happening now and will continue, and I can't wait to share that with everyone once we find that person.
And I want to get into laying the groundwork for what special education looks like in New Mexico. At a recent legislative education study meeting, it was mentioned that New Mexico law does not contain a special education act, but rather outlines broad requirements using rules. PED is in the process of proposing rule changes that would take effect at the end of this month. Can you explain what those proposed changes are?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're right. It is interesting that we don't have legislation around special education. And I would definitely expect to see this come up again in future legislative sessions, where we want to be able to establish this in legislation. When we talk about specific rule, the rule that that comes to mind right now that we really want to address in rule changes here at the Public Education Department really has to do around special education and gifted education. I'm going to turn the conversation to gifted education for just a minute. And so what we want to be able to do is create a rule specifically tailored around gifted education so that we can provide that guidance and support and funding to be able to increase and scale up those kinds of programs across the state.
Just over 50,000 students receive special education services in the state. The latest data from the 2022-23 school year shows that rate is higher than the latest national data. How do we support all of our students well?
So across the nation, you know, averages range between 10% of a population to 20% of a population. And New Mexico is just slightly above national average. That is true. It is always a concern because we want to make sure that students are getting what they need, having the resources they need. So I think the first answer to that question is, we need to improve our programs across the state to make sure that we have the appropriate programs, resources, and of course, highly qualified teachers across the state. But the next answer to that question is, we also want to make sure that students, whether you have an IEP or not, have access to grade level materials, to have access to the latest technologies, have access to when it comes to science and social studies and after school programs and athletics. These are all what creates an environment to help students become successful, whether you have an IEP or not. And so as we came out of the pandemic, we are noticing, and I think you can talk to any teacher, that their students are coming back with some other needs, with some traumas, also with not having some of those experiences that they need as they are, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old as pre-readers. Even little things like how we hold a pencil, how we socialize with each other. And so we're having to spend extra time, those pandemic years, catching students up. And in some ways, we have these conversations that, is this student behind? Is there a need for special education services? So we want to make sure that we have those robust conversations, because in some examples, it's going to be, yes, we need to be able to give these students supports and an IEP is appropriate. And in other situations, it's going to be, no, the student just needs these experiences and we need to make sure that they were exposing them to that. And then they're going to move on wonderfully as a regular ed student. So every student is unique. Every story is a little bit different. And this is part of the process of why we want to be able to elevate this idea of special education with the Office of Special Education so we can have these exact conversations and partnerships with schools and school districts across the state.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to take a lot of hard work, but I just want to say thank you again for sitting down with me this morning and chatting all about special education and being part of the show.
Taylor, just thank you for everything.
That was Secretary Arsenio Romero with the Public Education Department. I would now like to introduce my next guest, Michelle Trigimbo, the Special Education State Ombudsman with the New Mexico Developmental Disabilities Council. Good morning, Michelle. Thanks for joining.
Good morning, Taylor. Thank you so much for having me here.
And for folks who may not be familiar with the work you all do, can you explain what you all do at the Special or the Ombud for Special Education?
Sure. So we were an office created through House Bill 222 in 2021. And we are family advocacy first, but we are also a bridge between families who are struggling within the special education system in New Mexico and also state agencies which could offer support. So we do attend meetings with families, and if they are interested, they just need to give our office a call.
And we just heard from Secretary Romero about how we can better support kids with disabilities, but he did mention a program that would guide families from cradle to career and mentioned students who receive IEPs or an individual education plan. What does that process look like exactly? I know you guide families through this process.
It's a really good question. And to be fair, we really don't know what it looks like. It will build and grow as we focus on special education in New Mexico over the next several years. ECECD is doing an amazing job supporting our birth to three and then through kindergarten. I really focus on anyone in pre-K through 22 of their lives. And again, you know, making sure that children are ready for the transition at every entity, at every point, at three, at five, at, you know, from elementary to middle, from middle to high, and then beyond.
And what rights do parents and students have when making their own decisions when it comes to formulating that plan and making sure everything is working in the best interest of their students?
That is a really long question, and we don't have time for that. But there are many rights that families and children have. IDEA does map that out for all families. They do have the right to be an active member of the IEP team, and so they should be creating and planning with their students' team. That team changes each year or over several years in a row, and so it's important to build relationship and build communication again across the board so that kiddos can get what they need.
And we're going to be discussing a lot about inclusivity and how that would look like. But what does it look like when you all assist schools in making sure there are no unnecessary barriers to special education and how we increase opportunities?
Thank you. We are trying to reduce barriers and increase opportunities for every meeting we attend. We have supported over 300 families in New Mexico since our inception in 2021. And what it looks like is families call, they talk with us about their concerns, and we then attend IEP meetings. All of my staff members have extensive experience within special ed. So we offer best practices. We offer opportunities to think outside the box, again, in order to get students what they need.
And I know the school year is ramping up here just in a few weeks, but parents who may be going through this process of having their child evaluated for a disability and the impacts that can have on their education can be overwhelming, I'm sure. But what questions should they be asking?
They should be asking about data. They should be asking how has their child progressed over time? How have they not progressed? They should be asking about their teachers. Do you think there could be a disability at play? Or do you think, again, what Secretary of Education Romero said was, that there should be an understanding of where they're at and where they need to be. And they need to understand that they play a role in that. So it's not just the school made a decision and that's how it is, but the family is part of the team and how we work together.
And at the top of the hour, I mentioned those staggering statistics about proficiency and graduation rates of special education students. But what do you make of these numbers? Are we facing major systemic challenges?
Yes. I mean, I think systemic challenges are always at play. There is something that seems to be left out of that conversation, which is special education students are general education students first, and the whole point of specialized instruction is to get them back into the general ed setting, back into an inclusion setting. And so when students become proficient, they then are no longer considered a special education student. So when you talk about special education numbers for graduation or for proficiency levels, students who are performing on grade level are no longer part of that count. So you're really talking about students who continue to need specialized instruction. And so, yes, their numbers are going to be lower. And yes, should we all be working harder, challenging more, and ensuring that a disability doesn't mean they'll never read beyond fifth grade? Yes. But again, the professional development for both behavior intervention and academics is really important. It's the crux. If a kid can't sit and attend to the learning, then they're not going to be able to increase their academics.
And we're going to head to a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Taylor Velazquez. We're talking about special education. Are you a special education teacher? Are you a parent of a child in special education? And we want to hear from you. Call in at 505-277-5866, and we'll be back in a moment.
Support provided by Independent Vehicle Service, specializing in Volvo since 1981, offering professional detailing and reconditioned services. Just because it's good to have an independent dealer alternative. Details at ivsabq.com.
Our gratitude to all KUNM members for providing their support to ensure that news, as well as friendly companionship and much-needed music and storytelling, is available for all. The biggest share of KUNM's funding comes from you. Thank you.
Composer Derek Skye believes music can be a gateway to understanding other cultures. His passion is writing music connecting elements from across borders. Coming up, music inspired by the cultural mosaic of our country, American Mirror by Derek Skye, on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Taylor Velazquez. We're taking your calls this morning about special education. Are you a special education teacher? What tools are missing? Give us a call at 505-277-5866 or give us an email at letstalk@kunm.org. And I want to get back to my guest, Michelle Trigimbo, the Special Education State Ombud with the New Mexico Developmental Disabilities Council. Before the break, we were talking about the systemic challenges that are present for these students, but what needs to change immediately to start moving the state in a better direction? I know there's probably a lot of steps, but what are the beginning steps?
I think there really needs to be a focus on behavior. Of the, you know, over 300 families, almost 50% of my cases have been brought to my attention based on behavior. And so teachers understanding that behavior is communication, teachers understanding that behavior intervention is really the crux of their jobs, especially now. There's been lots of struggles, as you'll hear probably later today, that students are really struggling with the societal expectations within a classroom. And so understanding that a child who is having a difficult time is not a personal reflection and not something that should be ignored or pushed off, but dealt with immediately so that academics can be focused on.
And I know your office helps in both urban and rural areas. What are the challenges that we're seeing in rural areas, and how are those services different?
It's very interesting. The struggle that was mentioned earlier by the secretary is the human component. Every district, rural or urban, is struggling to maintain the teacher population, struggling to maintain speech and language therapists, occupational therapists, you know, along the gamut, even diagnosticians. In order to get into special education, specific evaluations must be done, and there aren't enough diags within the state of New Mexico to get testing done. You're talking about anywhere from a 6 month to a year and a half wait for getting into special education in the first place.
And I want to introduce my next guest, Alyssa Romaine, a parent of a special education student at Albuquerque Public Schools, and Robert Foyer, a special education teacher at Highland High School. Good morning, you two. Thanks for joining.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Alyssa, I know you're concerned about some recent announcements that were made by APS, but what has your experience been like at being a parent and having to advocate for your child?
So, thank you for having me on. I want to say that for my family specifically, overwhelmingly, our experience with Albuquerque Public Schools, our district, has been quite positive, largely. There have been a couple of things that have gone wrong, and one person who did definitely violate IDEA in an IEP meeting, but largely things have been good for us. But I think that that has a lot to do with the advantages that we have as a family. I have a really close relationship with my kids' teachers and the administrators at the school. And the reason that I have that is because I have the luxury of investing a lot of time in those relationships. A lot of parents don't have that luxury. I am an mildly overbearing white lady, and so I am welcome in almost any space I walk into. I have a master's degree in clinical psychology, so like all of the clinical terms that can be really overwhelming for a lot of families when they enter this space, I already knew all of them. So we were set up to have a good experience, and we have.
And Michelle, does that experience sound pretty familiar to you? I know you help parents every day. It sounds like you have to have a lot of knowledge going in before.
You do. And you have to be willing to ask the questions. Often, I was an administrator and a teacher for 25 years, and you get caught up in this is an IEP for the FBA, which we're including the BIP, and, you know, we love acronyms in education, and parents feel uncomfortable in stopping a meeting to ask, what are you talking about? What does that mean? What does that mean to my child's day? And so understanding the right verbiage to ask for specific things is also important. Sometimes that's just a communication issue, and sometimes it's if they don't know how to ask for that, then we're not going to offer it. And that's very rare, but it can happen as well.
And Alyssa, you know, we heard from PED earlier this hour about the new Office of Special Education, mm-hmm. but as a parent, what would you like to see that office accomplish?
I would love for that office to help parents know what their rights are within the system. I think a lot of parents coming into this don't know. You actually have a lot of influence, and you're the person who knows your child the best. And so when you're going into these meetings, when I go into these meetings, I know that I am the best authority on my kid. And I, you know, am perfectly willing to advocate very fiercely. But if that's not your style, as a parent, you can bring someone who is. You can bring, you know, our first IEP meeting, I tried to stack it so that there were as many kids or as many, I wanted to bring as many people to that meeting as the school was. And I didn't quite get there because it's like 13 people or something, but I brought his occupational therapist. There's things like that that I think a lot of parents don't know that they can do. That was only one of my bullet points. I apologize. I think that office also, the things that the secretary talked about, recruiting teachers is a huge thing. Training teachers is a huge thing. Encouraging inclusion in schools, like blending special education and general education students within the educational setting. Connecting families to advocates, like Michelle does. And why not create incentives for schools to serve these students?
And it sounds like we actually have a call from Chris this morning who is echoing some of the same things, Alyssa. Good morning, Chris.
Hi. Hi. I'm a parent, and my daughter just graduated. Couple of things I want to say. I could say so much. We've been doing this for, you know, her whole school career. One thing, I heard just now that there's an ombudsman for the state of New Mexico for parents and kids with special needs. I had no idea about that. I feel like we need to start at birth almost to sit down and connect in parents and families with all the resources. I could have used an ombudsman. The principal at my daughter's school wanted to prevent her from walking graduation, and I was scrambling, looking for support, advocacy, legal help. couldn't find anything, and then somehow he relented. But it was very stressful. Her teacher in high school had no idea that something called the DD waiver existed. So how could a special ed teacher not have that information? And that is something that you sign up for at birth, you know? And so there's this gap, especially out here farther from the bigger urban centers. There's a gap in information and resource sharing for parents.
And Chris, I actually want to ask you a quick question. You know, you just mentioned rural access and how those services can be few and far between. But what district are you, or was your daughter in?
Taos.
And I'm sorry that was your experience, and hopefully we can have some solutions further down in this hour. But Alyssa, I want to get back to that question, or back to this premise that there's a lot of supports needed, but maybe not accessible. And you brought it to our newsroom's attention that under the new APS budget, special education students are counted as 39% of one student when allocating general education funds. You mentioned that this pretty openly discriminates against students with disabilities. Can you explain the impact this has on your child and other children with disabilities?
Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to talk about this budget. Yes, under the budget for the next school year for Albuquerque Public Schools, these students will, many of these special education students are counted as not an entire student, but as two-fifths of a student, roughly. So I'm not a historian. The nation we live in does have a pretty dark history of counting people as part of a people. We can all agree that's not fair. But in terms of concrete effects at the school, what this will mean at my son's school specifically is that all of the students at the school, because it is a school that serves many special education students, so many of those, you know, they're getting dramatically less money than they did last year. It means that all of the students have less access to things like music, art, PE. The other key issue is that with less general education funds, when the special educations are included with special education students are included with their general education peers, those classes are going to be overcrowded. This is particularly problematic at elementary schools. If you think about like trying to massage that money and sort of carefully schedule people around so that it's not too crowded, that becomes a lot easier at a middle school or a high school where something like science is happening all day. But at an elementary school, there just aren't enough spots. And so if you've got, our school, for instance, has a lot of kids on the autism spectrum. If you're, if you've got a class, a full, say, first grade class, and then the autistic kids are going in there for their inclusion time, then that class is overcrowded. It is difficult for everyone. It's difficult for the teacher, difficult for the special education student, difficult for the general education students. It's just a losing proposition all around. And over time, the problem with this budget is that it will disincentivize schools from welcoming students with special, who need special services. And that's, it's hard enough as a parent to find the right environment for your kid if they're trying to push you out the door even more because they know they're not going to get the funds they need. It's horrible.
And Michelle, what do you make of all this talk about budgets and rolling back on special education for students?
Well, it has been interesting because when you speak with the legislature and when you look at bills that have been passed and pushed through, there is lots of funding out there. But I have heard several conversations from districts across the state where their budgets did go down. And you know, another piece that Albuquerque Public Schools has offered is that they are going to not offer inclusion yeah, they're going to stop offering inclusion and small group science and social studies at high school and middle school, which means that these students who need specialized instruction are going to be placed in a general education setting without the supports that they need in order to be successful. So it is concerning. I don't know how final that plan is. But again, you know, the money rules the world. Another piece that has frustrated families for many years is the fact that it's very difficult to follow the special education allocations to districts. Where do they go? Where does the money, is it supporting the purchase of a Hoyer, or is it, being put in a larger bin?
And we actually have a call from Richard in Albuquerque. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am a high school special education science teacher, and I'm also concerned about the recent news that I heard that APS was planning on eliminating both small group and inclusion science and social studies special education supports. My concern is that it's going to have a big impact on especially the kids I work with. A lot of them are going to really struggle in order to be successful and especially graduate if they don't receive any supports at all, which it sounds like that's going to be the case. And both social studies and science are core required classes, and that means that if students don't pass those classes, it's going to prevent them from graduating.
Thank you so much for calling in, Richard. And I actually want to turn to Robert, our veteran teacher in the room. What do you make of these rollbacks that APS has just announced for science and social studies? Will the students who need that extra help fall further behind?
Well, first of all, I want to say hi to Richard because he is my coworker. And so, hi, Richard. Hope you had a good summer. But it would be difficult. I actually like the inclusion model. But if they're not talking about inclusion and just moving kids straight into general ed, then you're missing the whole point of it, which is to have two adults in the room and helping students and. I actually am an inclusion social studies teacher. And so, we're just blended. We're a blended family in the room, and it's great. And it really works. It's wonderful. And especially in this day and age, we are seeing apps that we never had before. You know, I could have used them. I wish I had Grammarly growing up. I wish I had Snap and Read and all these other different, and they all have computers, right? So the students that go into an inclusion environment really have the opportunity now to stay along with the class with the assistance of technology.
And we did reach out to APS concerning this topic, and spokesperson Monica Armenta sent along a statement from Chief of Schools Chanel Segura, which says, it is the goal of all APS leadership to ensure students with disabilities have equitable access to grade level standards and general curriculum through inclusive practices, rather than practices that might result in secluding them. You can find out more by going to our webpage for the show. And Alyssa, what do you make of inclusion, and how do we balance getting people the education they need to succeed and thrive in school, but also making sure they're also getting that inclusion and their peers are learning from each other?
Thanks for asking. That you've posed this question as a dichotomy, but I think it isn't. I think inclusivity is high-quality education. Special education students do better. General education students do better. The teachers get better at teaching when everyone is together. Now, from a practicability standpoint, I think the problem, I mean, you can't just chuck everybody in the pool and hope they all swim. And I think a really key point to making that work is for classes to not be so big. If classes are the right size, everybody wins.
and we're actually going to take a quick break. We're talking about solutions for building a better special education program on Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Taylor Velazquez, and we'll be back in a minute.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, next time on Latino USA. An investigation into how women are sexually abused in ICE detention when they're at their most vulnerable in a medical setting, and how ICE has done very little to stop it. That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Donations come in many forms: a sustaining membership, a one-time gift, even that extra vehicle you no longer need. Donating a vehicle is a great way to support KUNM. It's easy, pickup is free, you get a tax deduction, a KUNM membership, and your vehicle could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Give us a call today to learn more about donating your vehicle. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're taking your calls about special education in New Mexico. We're looking at how to build a stronger statewide special education program. Give us your ideas. There's still time to call in this morning at 505-277-5866. And I want to get back to our veteran teacher in the room, Robert Foyer. We've spoken in the past about teacher burnout and the sense of blame the teacher. In your experience, is there a lack of trust when it comes to educators doing their job and making sure they're providing for their children?
Yeah, you know, when I'm listening to this whole argument, one thing that kind of sticks out to me in my career with APS and what I've witnessed is that a large percentage of our students are come from highly impoverished families, and that's negatively impacting them. It's not across the board. You can't say that about all special ed students, but a large amount of my students that I've worked with, their families are in distress. So it's hard for them to think about education, and it's hard for families. I think you talked about having the ability to advocate for your student. A lot of families that I work with don't have that ability. And so, you know, it's the elephant in the room, but poverty plays a big part of it. And we talked about, we need to start dealing with these kids as babies. Right. Let's give pre and postnatal care to women and support them with their children. And I think we could see major changes, but no one really goes there. So...
And we lost our caller, but Robert, what access of tools or supports do you wish you had in your classroom?
You know, I think maybe an educational assistant in my classroom, but I just think that I would like to go be more inclusive, to have that resource, to have that money where we go, you know, all of my students can go in. And we talked about behaviors earlier on, that a large percentage of special ed students have behavioral issues. Well, that's true. And one of the behaviors they have is their lack of motivation in the classroom. We see them sleeping or not coming into the classroom. And you put them in an inclusion environment where they're modeling from other students, and it is amazing to see the difference. And I've even seen students who've had behavior problems in special ed rooms, acting out, and they don't do that in the general ed environment. And so a lot of that is a great solution. Also, my other solution is a really robust vocational program that is targeted for special ed students. A lot of the programs at CEC are too difficult, the reading and writing, but targeting where these students we can make a difference for them in knowing that they can leave high school and make good money, you know? And that's how we could get them to stay. That's the buy-in, right? Is through jobs and jobs right after high school.
And we actually have our caller back on the line, Erica from Northern New Mexico. Good morning, Erica. Thanks for calling back in.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me. I come at this from a lot of different viewpoints. I was a past educator. I ran special ed meetings, IEP meetings. I've had two separate children go through special ed programs, one full inclusion with an auditory processing disorder and one that's profoundly disabled, who, you know, is a level C special ed student. And I've seen it done really, really well, and I've seen it done very poorly. And the key always comes down to the individuals that are involved and the way that they were trained. And especially for my high school student that had the auditory processing disorder, it really came down to the general education teachers and how well they were trained and how well they worked together with the special ed department. And oftentimes that doesn't happen. And I work in a different capacity now, and I attend meetings as an advocate. And so many times the general education teachers, sometimes they don't even know what's in the IEP or if there is even is an IEP for students. And they're having behavioral problems with the students, but they don't know what the interventions on the IEP are. They haven't worked with the special ed department to work with those students in the classrooms. And I don't know if it's a lack of training. I don't know if it's each individual school does special ed so completely different. I really feel that the PED needs to do a better job of supporting schools, especially in rural areas that have high turnover, more than being a punitive entity where they always feel like they're having to fulfill these obligations to the PED or for audits. That they feel that the PED is more of a support to them and gives them more training. And it's not always about the money, which money is always nice, but sometimes it's not about the money. It's just about being supportive and training these teachers how to work together with special ed departments
to get good outcomes for
these kids.
Thanks so much for calling in, Erica. And Michelle over here in our studio is nodding her head pretty vigorously over here. So what do you think about Erica's comments about she doesn't know if things are just done so differently across schools? How do we make sure that training is streamlined?
It is one of our hopes at OSEO that the executive order is going to create more support and more training across the board. Cradle to Career is a lot about making sure that ECECD, Public Education Department, and Higher Ed are all working together. Teachers do need more support in their pre-service education, but then there needs to be ongoing professional development, and that's where the money part comes in. Professional development is not cheap, and that's not free. So creating opportunities for teachers to have ongoing opportunities to ask questions, to improve in what interventions they're offering. Many times, everyone is frustrated within a classroom because they don't understand, as Erica mentioned, what interventions are in the IEP, what interventions are possible, and also giving teachers the professional respect and understanding that they can offer interventions whether there's an IEP or not. They can offer supports whether there's something written in a document or not. What's written in the document is legally required, which I think often teachers can be misinformed about.
And we have another caller on the line, Felix from Santa Fe. Good morning, Felix.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. It seems like you want to talk about the dual role of special education teachers and them also having to be case managers sometimes.
Yes. Let me just start off by saying hola and buenos dias to everybody there, especially Michelle. I want to talk about the topic of the dual role of the special education teacher. You know, Secretary Romero started out by talking about professional development, which I support. And also the second role is to welcome teachers or individuals into the field of teaching to teach. And that's my concern, is that I retired from special education as a social worker after 35 years. And over those years, I've supported both students and staff, teachers. And the teachers, special ed teachers, are overwhelmed with the extra duty of case management. I think that in itself should be separated out, maybe brought in a social worker, someone who can do case management and work together with the other teachers, because that's a tremendous role. And I think it overburdens a lot of times the issues that the teachers have to do. And I've seen classes where sometimes, you walk into a classroom, the teacher's trying to teach, but yet she has to work on her IEP and the case management part. And you know, the sad thing is I see kids left behind. they're not attended to, and it hurts. It hurts to see that.
Thanks so much for calling in, Felix, and bringing that to everyone's attention. But I do want to get to my last guest this morning, Joel Davis, attorney, parent, and chair of the New Mexico Developmental Disabilities Council. Welcome in, Joel. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for talking about this issue. It's much needed.
And I'm sure from your experiences as an attorney, you can speak a little bit about Yazzie Martinez and that settlement. What movement has there been on that settlement, and has anything changed for your family since you do have a child in special education?
Concerning Yazzie Martinez, I don't see much movement. It seems like it's pretty scattershot, and there's not a lot of direction on where to go with addressing Yazzie Martinez. So that's kind of disappointing, and, you know, of course, that affects our family.
For sure. And Michelle, what needs to be done in terms of Yazzie Martinez? Should we be anticipating a potential move back to court?
Well, I think one thing that we all need to remember is that Yazzie Martinez is really goes beyond the public education department. Robert mentioned, you know, starting at birth and understanding. So we've got to talk about Department of Health. We've got to talk about poverty. We've got to talk about how all these people and entities intersect and how we can support. In my new role, I started going to many behavioral health meetings. And they talk about wraparound services. Well, wraparound services is not something that I ever talked about as an educator because we're left out of that conversation, but we're 6.5 hours of that student's day. So how do all of the state entities work together? And again, I hope that the executive order and elevating special education, bringing them to the table and ensuring that everyone has a voice. Don't forget about the intensive needs of some special ed students and the less intensive needs of others. And how does that work into their health care, their aftercare, their vocational training after? So we've all got to figure out how we can work together, again, to create supports across the board.
When talking about all the solutions we've had so far this morning, Joel, you're the chair of the New Mexico Developmental Disabilities Council. What changes are you all pushing for? What's the most important changes for you all?
Well, I think I want to look at, or if I want to address that question, we worked pretty vigorously on creating the Office of Special Ed at PED. We worked really hard on that bill. It didn't go through, but the governor has put out an executive order. In that executive order, what we're hoping to see is it get elevated, special ed get elevated higher up into the bureaucracy. It's very buried. It's a bureau. It's kind of a afterthought in the planning when you're talking about the big level or higher level things that PED plans. And so putting a spotlight on it should help us start to work on it more effectively. I think a big factor in that is it includes data collection. A lot of the school districts are not collecting data on important things, or we talk about restraint and seclusion. There was a report in 2019 from Searchlight New Mexico that stated between 2014 and 2019 there were 4,500 instances of restraint, but they weren't reported. When they report to the U.S. Department of Education, there's zero because they don't have a category to collect that data, so they don't have to report it. So we want to take data collection seriously. We want to make sure the districts are reporting all the data we need to address these issues so that we can learn from the good districts. And then hopefully develop from that data and that evidence-based practices a standardized system across the state. We're in Rio Rancho. There's a certain system there. You go to Silver City, they have a totally different perspective. It needs to be standardized so that PED can help and so that our kids across the state are getting what they need. I mean, there's no way to do it piecemeal the way it's going. There's not enough money in the system. And, you know, it's like Alyssa said, a lot of people, it depends on which people you have in the room or Michelle. A school could be one of the best autism learning schools in the district, and then a new principal comes in, and then they have no clue about how to work it, and they don't know IDEA, and then the whole system in that school gets thrown underground. Hopefully, with this kind of standardized practice, we can eliminate some of the barriers through those evidence-based practices, get kids out of the small groups. I mean, it, the way the system works now, they kind of are thrown into the small groups, and then you have to do everything you can to claw your way out of the small groups. With kids with autism, they have issues with social learning. If they're around a lot of other kids that have issues with social learning, that's what they're learning. You got to get them into an inclusive classroom so they know how to interact with society, learn more, be in the classes that actually teach them, you know, life skills and things like that. So that's a big deal to us.
And I also want to follow up with you. We heard from Secretary Romero earlier this hour, and we briefly spoke about how special education doesn't appear in state law and that we don't have a Special Education Act. Do you think having that embedded in law would help get special education as a priority and make sure they're being served as best as we can?
Well, certainly. An executive order only lasts as long as the administration. Next administration can come in, cancel that or override it. And so, you know, all this progress we've made goes for naught. So we need to have legislation. We need the legislature to step up. We need to get them to look at the problem from our perspective. I think there's an issue there where a lot of the people that are in charge in the legislative process for these issues don't have familiarity with special ed. And so to them, it's kind of, it's like Robert and Alyssa said, they don't have training in it. They don't have training, they don't understand IDEA law, so they don't think it has the importance that we do because we just want the state to follow the law. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, Yazzie Martinez has won lawsuit. We haven't addressed it yet. It's still open for lawsuits as far as the issue goes. We'd like them to address that not only for our kids, but also for our state so that we're not continuing to face these lawsuits and spending money unnecessarily on lawsuits when we could be putting it into the classroom.
And I actually read July is Disability Pride Month. How can we all better reflect on creating more equitable and affirming educational experiences for students and disabilities? And Joel, I'll throw that one to you.
Can you say that again?
No problem. July is Disability Pride Month. And how should we all moving forward, especially after this conversation, reflect on how we give students with disabilities better educational experiences?
You know, the two-fifths argument is one of the, that kind of hit home. I have one child that's, you know, developmentally disabled, has severe intellectual disabilities. I also have another one that was on the other end, gifted, reading at a high school level when he was 8, right? Both of them we had problems getting services, okay? Is he two-fifths and she's two-fifths? I don't think so. A lot of these folks can be productive members of society, and regardless of what we consider productive members of society, they're still people. They can still vote. They have all the rights everyone else does. I think that's a key. You know, we don't just need to warehouse these kids in a small classroom, because it also teaches the other children, the children who are not in special ed, how to treat other people with compassion and not just see through, you know, not look at them as a judge a book by the cover. They have a disability, but there's also things they can learn from them too. A kid with autism has a wholly different way of looking at the world, and it's taught me so much. So I'd like to see those kind of issues addressed.
Definitely. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks to everyone who called in and emailed to share your thoughts. And thank you so much to our guests, Alyssa Romaine, Joel Davis, Robert Foyer, Secretary Arsenio Romero, and Michelle Trigimbo. This show was made possible by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and KUNM listeners like you. Let's keep the conversation going. Share your ideas on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or you can email us at letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Mia Casas took your calls, and news director Megan Kamrick is our executive producer. I'm Taylor Velazquez. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.